I remember when I was going through this in the beginning, one of my friends said, are you sure you want to be a CEO? It's one thing to be a founder of a business, and it's another thing to be a CEO, because being a CEO is just, I don't work for anybody but my team.
Yeah.
Like, I got, like, I can't do this without them.
Right.
So if I can't do this without them, I got to figure out how to be the best version for them, but I got to learn them. So now I'm a Phil Jackson on the basketball court, right, trying to know, you know, who's my Dennis Rodman? Who's my Michael Jordan? Yes. Like, who do I got to sub out because they're having a bad game today? And that energy takes time away from doing what I did when I didn't have a team.
Ghetto. Good idea, now we buying merch.
Girl, that's ghetto.
Payment miss.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Say she quit.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Late on your rent.
Rent is ghetto.
New event.
Ooh, the ghetto.
Invoice in.
That ain't ghetto.
Money spent.
Oh, that's ghetto. Hold on, it's kind of ghetto being a CEO.
Have you been completely isolating yourself in business? Like, you don't have people that you could do this business with. Well, you need coworkers, and that is why we created the Entrepreneurs Coworkers Community. This allows you to be able to develop relationships with other people in your community. So in the Entrepreneurship Coworkers Community, we give you a quiz to find out who you are and what type of CEO you are. And in this quiz, you get to meet other CEOs that may be more creative or traditional or hybrid. We have these CEOs there for you. But even taking it up a notch, we have local chapters in your city, from Atlanta to Dallas to New York to Houston to Chicago, chapters in your city where we're actually linking up every single month to work together, linking up to go to brunch together, having fun together, doing community service outreach. Like, this is a section of our life where we can really co-work and mingle with other people. It's time for you to get some co-workers, sis. And this community is completely free. Just because you're watching this podcast, all you have to do is stop, pause the podcast, click the link below, take the assessment, get in the community, and I'll see you there. Bye, coworker. Back to the episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Ghetto CEO Podcast, where we talk about all things being a CEO, because honestly, y'all, being a CEO is super ghetto, okay? And today I got my co-host, my brother, our sales director, and our business manager, all the things, anything I need, okay? He is also the co-host, you know what I mean? Big Cody.
Hey, I'm just trying to.
We talked about them gun sounds. Like, just
stop. I was just trying to make it gangster.
Like, we don't need it.
It's called the Ghetto CEO.
Oh my God. Anyways, y'all, Cody is here to help. I don't know why he be here. Shit. But anyways, we are going to interview another CEO on the couch today, where we talk about all the things entrepreneurship, the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs, to really dive into the behind the scenes of being a CEO. And so we got my girl, Miss Ashley Fox. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well.
Listen, are you excited?
I am.
I'm excited. I hope you are comfy. Okay, we gone.
I'm loving this blanket.
Listen, we want to know all your business. So, before we get started, okay, we play a segment called Let's Vent. Okay? So, to come into the episode, we coming in hot. Okay? What is one thing that you want to vent about that has happened in the last 7 days that you feel like you haven't been able to share? Like, you really just need to get this off your chest.
So I would say in the past 7 days, I went back outside. And so, but outside to me is not being in the house.
Yes.
Not being in the office.
Yes.
Not working with my team.
Yes.
But putting myself out there.
Ooh.
Okay.
So like in the past 7 days, whether it was 2-3 speaking engagements.
Yes.
3-4 podcasts.
Yes.
And as a result of that, you see a direct correlation. So when I have that energy and I'm outside and I'm, you know, I'm talking, I'm educating.
Yeah.
There's a direct correlation to my social media. So my customer service, our emails are backed up.
Yeah.
My DMs are backed up. But it's cool. But I mean, this has happened to me before. I've been like in the news and things like that. Yeah. But I never could handle it. It was always too much.
Yeah.
So I'm back outside.
Yes.
It's exciting, but it's scary. So there's so many great things happening right now.
Yeah.
And if I'm being honest, it's like, can I handle it? And so I remember having this feeling at least 2-3 times in the past.
Okay.
And I told myself when I went back inside, because I was inside for a long time, I'm going to build this business.
Yes.
So when I go back outside, we can actually serve the world as a company. Because first time I was outside, I was all over the news. This was like 2014. I had no website. So now it's like, okay, I have a business. Like,
yes.
Like we're not just making money. We got some infrastructure.
Yes.
But if I'm being honest, part of me is scared.
Because I've been here before, but I literally told myself that I need you to be as still as possible.
Yeah.
As you go through this journey, because I told myself once I'm outside, I'm not coming back.
Ooh. So I like it.
I mean, I'm here. I'm look, this is outside.
Yes, we outside right now. Okay. One thing I like about that is in the transparency and the vulnerability of being able to say that I'm scared, but I'm walking and trusting in faith, yeah. Right? Because a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we feel like you hit this milestone and you never be scared again. Mm-hmm. You never get afraid. You never have That's new a lie. Seasons. And yeah. Like you said, it's a lie.
I get scared every season.
Yeah.
What? Like every time something new happens. And I think there's no rule book to entrepreneurship. There's so mm-hmm. many unwritten rules that, like, they missed that part in school.
Yeah.
They missed that part on the internet where people were glorifying all the money mm-hmm. and the trips they were taking.
Yes.
Yeah, no. I think I get scared every day.
Yes.
If I'm being honest, I think I tell my chief of staff, I don't know almost every meeting we have. There's so many things I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know, there's fear that what if I mess up? Mm. What if I make the wrong mistake? You know, so I'm about scared every day.
But how do you navigate the fear? Because obviously you're not saying I'm scared, so I'm not going to try. You're still persevering. So what is that?
I think my belief in me is so strong that there's nothing that can stop me. So fear is always present. But my belief that I can surpass that mm-hmm. because I see what the end result looks like. I've tasted it. I also have a therapist, a spiritual advisor, and an executive coach. So I pay thousands of dollars for... I'll go to my therapist, like, look, this is what happened today. I was crying this day. I'm scared.
Yes.
This person on my team driving me crazy. I don't know what to do. So I have outlets that I go to.
Gotcha.
Because I know I don't have all the answers. So I'm okay with paying people who do have the answers.
Gotcha. I love that. So you stepping back outside. We coming back. But let them know who you are and what you do.
So my name is Ashley M. Fox.
Yes.
I'm the CEO of Empify. It's the word. It's a word I made up. So it's the word empower and modify merged together. And we are a fintech startup that is revolutionizing how adults and children learn how to build wealth. So we've created financial programs, put them in school systems. We've been in prison systems. We worked with tons of Fortune 500 companies. We have our Wealth Builders Community app, which is a membership-based app, which is like the Netflix of finance. Mm-hmm. So now adults and children from all over the world are starting to learn and consume and effectively build wealth in this country through the eyes of a former Wall Street analyst. And so I never wanted to be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
I didn't even know being a CEO was ghetto until I became one. but when I worked on Wall Street, and so I worked with millionaires and billionaires, and you had to have at least $25 million to even talk to my team. Mm. So I got exposed to bank accounts, lifestyles, investments, strategies, like that the one, like the 0.001% were accustomed to. And I was there for a while, and I realized that for something we're using every day, why is it not taught in our school system? Mm. You shouldn't have to major in finance, work on Wall Street to get access to this information.
Yeah.
But deep down inside, I always want to be a teacher. Nobody knows that.
Mm.
I always want to be a teacher, and I love psychology. But teachers in my mind didn't make enough money.
Right.
And if you wanted to major in psychology, you needed to have a master's degree or higher to make equivalent to Wall Street money. So I chose the fast route. I wanted the fast money.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose Wall Street. But deep down inside, it wasn't meant for me because I would say a few years in, not even 8 months in, I was like, I didn't want it anymore. And I'm also the type of person that has to have a big audacious goal, do something that has never been done from the eyes of what I grew up around or just what the world is used to. And then once I do it, it's like, it's not fun anymore. And so I think I had four internships, worked at all these banks, had this fancy old job, made this money. But it's like when you're around millionaires and billionaires and what they're making what you're making in a year is what they pay in a fee for one of their hundreds of mutual funds. It's like I'm on the wrong end of the table.
Right.
So I realized, one, I deserve to be that client.
Yeah.
Two, this didn't make me happy. I got more joy out of learning how our clients acquire their wealth than showing them how to sustain it. Mm. And so over time, I started to read a lot of books. And I realized I just wanted to do what made me feel good. So when I left my job, it was, I'm going to be that black woman who's going to translate this Wall Street knowledge that wealthy people know and literally live, sleep, and breathe by, but I'm going to give it to the world Wall Street tends to overlook. I'm going to focus on the 99% and give them the resources and create this universal language called Empify and be able to give the resources because wealth doesn't have a color, right? And I think we have this perception of what money looks like because of what we're used to seeing. And it's like, how do I redefine that you don't have to wear a suit, a black or blue suit, or be a Caucasian man to get money in America?
Right.
And it's like, you can do that with what you have, starting with what you have right now. Mm-hmm. But I got to believe in you because I saw what was possible.
Yes.
So I wanted to create something that gave the tools and resources to an audience that didn't even believe they deserved it. Mm-hmm. But because I saw it, I knew we deserved it. And I'm going to figure out how to get it done.
I love this. I love this. So even you going through this journey, you had to tap into what your own purpose was, right? And really figure it out. Because like you said, you have several iterations. And because I know your story, you started with the kids. Mm-hmm. And now it looks a little bit different. But what do you feel like has been the most fulfilling part of your journey?
I think it's people's lives being changed. Mm-hmm. You get those random DMs. I started investing because of you. I have investments for my kids. Or when you meet people and they know you and they're crying, it's like people have to borrow my belief for them to recognize that they deserve to build wealth, because one, they're seeing me do it. I'm showing them how to do it, but I'm not just teaching you, I'm doing it with you. And so I'm very big on telling my story, right? Like, I'm not going to teach anything that I don't do, right? I don't follow trends. I've been this same Ashley since 2013 when I quit my Wall Street job. And so for me, it's really about seeing people execute on abundantly what I started to do from the beginning. Yeah. And when I see those results, our community just last year, we invested close to $3 million together.
Yeah.
And these are people who didn't have a brokerage account, which is the account you need to invest. Yeah. They didn't have the account. They didn't know what a stock was. They were afraid. They didn't think, they thought they needed a lot of money. It's like, hey, there's a company that exists that can instill greatness in you, but also give you education, but produce results. Because I think you go on the internet, there's so many people on the internet talking about finance, which is such a phenomenal thing.
Right.
Because in 2013, nobody was talking about this. Mm. Like, there weren't these new apps. Like, I had to pay $7 to $10 every time I bought a stock on the stock market. It's free now. So the game is different.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to get the awareness. Is we are the Harvard of finance. You come to us to execute on what you learned on the internet, and we're going to produce the results for you. So much that financial institutions are now seeing, hey, you're reaching an audience and getting them to produce results that we don't know how to do. Mm. Now, you got the great product, but I got the great inspiration, the tools, the resources, and infrastructure to pull out the inner greatness of the people that I serve.
Right.
And really seeing people execute on that, and seeing organizations and Fortune 500 companies recognize, like, hey, you're doing something we can't do, but you're turning unqualified people at some point to now qualified people who actually understand what's happening on Wall Street, and they want to learn. They're not running from it now. They're running towards it because of us.
If you're over here on YouTube watching the podcast, listen, I need you to do me a favor. If you love me, do me this favor. Pull out your phone right now and go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts or anywhere that you actually listen to podcasts at, right? I need you to subscribe and leave a review. Listen, the way podcasts work is the streets don't know we doing good if it's not on the audio version. The YouTube version don't really count, okay? So go over there, leave us a review, and let us know how much you love the podcast. Now back to the episode. You know, what do you feel like has been the catalyst to this, like, financial boom? Like, do you feel like, and when it comes to education, do you feel like it's trendy now? Like, do you feel like, because I feel like a lot of people are telling people, like, how to invest, how to talk about, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I think it started, I just was a little bit early, because I remember quitting my job and my dad thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had this big old fancy job making six figures. I looked phenomenal on paper, but I wasn't happy. Mm. And it's like, I had struggled with quitting my job because I had a good job. Mm. Like, I was making more than my parents. So, but I followed what felt good. Mm. And so this generation, so if we're talking about millennials, we don't just want to work at a desk and do something because it looks good on paper. Some finance people do. But we yearn for more purpose. Like, my dad worked tremendously hard because that's what he was supposed to do, right? I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. I chose to do what I want to do.
Right.
And so it's like, how can we intertwine society's norms, conditioning, with what I want to do? And so now you have things like traveling more and working from home. I think social media has evolved. So what we're able to see other people's lives look like, show us what's possible.
Yeah.
I also think the pandemic played a huge role in it, too. Because people started to realize that they could, and some in their minds, be effective from home.
Yeah.
The hybrid model was created.
Yeah.
But you see people living a life that you didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. That generation before us couldn't see other people's lives.
Yeah.
They might have listened to it on the internet, but you can see the pictures on a vacation. Like, you can see the money people are making, the clothes that they're wearing. The generation before that didn't have the internet. So I think the internet's evolution gave us more exposure.
Right.
And our exposure caused us to desire more and our desire to have more of a purpose. Like, even things like me having a spiritual advisor or doing yoga or healing, like, that wasn't a thing for our parents, right? So we just have a different way of life. And I think the culmination of that, the desire of seeing people live lives and make money make people want to make money too. I mean, there's so many people who don't want to, you know, I don't want to have a job. I want to fire my boss. And it's like, yeah. I don't know if I fully believe in that holistic thought right. process, mm-hmm. but at least people now see the possibility.
Yeah.
And you have ways to make millions of dollars on the internet now. So I think we're taking advantage of it. But even still, even coming from a finance background, like most people don't know, like if you have licenses to talk, like to, if you have licenses in, on Wall Street, you can't go on the internet. Like the stuff I talk about on the internet, if I worked at a big Wall Street bank, legally you can't do that. Mm. So most Wall Street people don't have big platforms. Mm. The biggest people who have the biggest platforms are not backed by an institution.
Yeah.
Most people thought in order to have success, I got to be backed by a $1 billion business. Mm. Now you don't have to be backed by anybody. You have to have a personality,
right.
good marketing skills, and a platform on social media for free.
Right.
So I think the internet, because of its evolution, more people who are educated recognize you don't need a fancy resume to talk about money. You don't need a fancy resume to educate the world and get people to follow you and listen. So I think a combination of just the internet, our desire to want more, to be more, and the pandemic making us realize we got to make money and do things outside of what we've been trained to do and conditioned to believe.
So that inability for people that are currently on Wall Street to not be able to go out and vocalize, does that have anything to do with like insider trading?
No. So okay. it's more of, if, for example, right, if I'm on Wall Street, I'm working with $1 billion, like a billionaire, right? Mm-hmm. There's tons of billionaire clients. And I can go look in their bank accounts. What's stopping me from going on the internet and talking about it,
gotcha,
right?
Gotcha.
What's stop? Let's say that $1 billion company or that they run a $1 billion business. That's a publicly traded company, which means you could own their stock. Mm. I see a transaction that's happening. I could go tell the internet.
Gotcha.
So there's limitations to because of the exposure and information you get access to.
Okay.
Also, if I go on the internet and I say, go buy this stock, and people go buy it and lose money, they're not coming for me. They're coming for the organization that backs me. So for liability purpose, for legal purposes, you can't do that. Like
gotcha.
when I started to teach kids, I still had my licenses and they were asking me a lot of questions. And I'm like, they're kids, you know, like, but there's so many, even how you say things can be perceived a different way. So you just have to be very careful with what you say. And if something were to go wrong and people try to sue you, the company that owns, not own, I forgot the word, but who holds your license to be able to talk or do finance, they're going to be in trouble. And
gotcha.
So there are laws in place that don't. So some of the biggest and most prominent people in finance, they might say certain things, but if they have a big platform, they're probably not talking about financial education.
Gotcha.
Most financial advisors, they can't do that. And again, it makes sense because I come from that background.
Right.
But I don't have licenses. So for me, if I want to go teach an 8-year-old how to buy stock, I'm going to figure out how to help this 8-year-old buy a stock. But I also target an audience that doesn't have money. And what most people don't know, most financial advisors or people in finance make money when you make money, right? So they get a percentage of the assets. So if my community only has $100 to start, I'm not making anything.
Right.
I want to go for the big boy that has $100 million because I get a percentage of their assets under that I'm managing. Mm-hmm. So typically that audience isn't the go-to because I can't make a lot of money off of you.
Yeah.
It's not as beneficial. And also too, I mean, if I'm being honest, just African Americans, you got to go through a lot of mental barriers to get them to trust and believe and to move forward.
Yes.
Not everybody wants to go. Now I do because I know how to do it. But if I'm a bank, I'm not about to go through your bad credit, the trauma around, you know, getting kicked out here, you being scared. And again, those are real things that we go through, but that's not the job of a bank.
Yeah.
They sell products and services. So they're going to go after the customer that can help their bottom line. And unfortunately, that's not always Black people. Mm-hmm. And so because I know that, I understand the banking system, but I also understand the hearts and minds of people I serve, how do I bridge that gap? Because it's not that we don't need the financial system, but the financial system might not understand our language. I understand both languages. And so how do I intertwine the two to effectively help people build wealth in this country while we're here?
Gotcha. And going back to 2013, right? That's when you left Wall Street.
Yeah.
Where did that confidence come from that you would be able to leave that sector, but then come back and still make them respect you in a way that now these entities are still wanting to have conversations?
I mean, we're talking about 10 years later. I wasn't always this confident.
Okay.
when I left, that was the first time in life, and I operate this way all the time. I don't operate off of logic. I operate off of what feels right. So some people, you know, something outside of me is guiding me, not my thoughts, because if it's coming from my brain, it's driven through fear, doubt, and worry. So my mind's telling me, don't quit your job. You got bills to pay.
Right.
My mind is telling me, well, what if this doesn't work? You can't survive, right? And your mind is trained to protect you, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to be in survival mode. I'm saying that, well, what if this works, right?
Right.
I also had $30,000 when I quit. But I just knew I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. Like, I chased happiness, even when I was teaching kids in the schools.
Have you been completely isolating yourself in business? Like, you don't have people that you could do this business with. Well, you need coworkers, and that is why we created the Entrepreneurs Coworkers Community. This allows you to be able to develop relationships with other people in your community. So in the Entrepreneurship Coworkers Community, we have a complete Slack channel where you get to talk to other CEOs just like you. We give you a quiz to find out who you are and what type of CEO you are. And in this quiz, you get to meet other CEOs that may be more creative or traditional or hybrid. We have these CEOs there for you. But even taking it up a notch, we have local chapters in your city, from Atlanta to Dallas to New York to Houston to Chicago, chapters in your city where we're actually linking up every single month to work together, linking up to go to brunch together, having fun together, doing community service outreach. Like, this is a section of our life where we can really co-work and mingle with other people. It's time for you to get some coworkers, sis. And this community is completely free. Just because you're watching this podcast, all you have to do is stop, pause the podcast, click the link below, take the assessment, get in the community, and I'll see you there. Bye, coworker. Back to the episode.
System. I was teaching about 6 classes a day running around the city of Philadelphia. And I got to a space where I was really phenomenal at it. And then I said, you know what? I want to build a business that can massively scale education in our school system. I don't want to be the girl to teach. I want to build a business. And even now, sometimes I feel like I could be the girl on the internet. I don't want to be the girl on the internet. I want I want the business. You're going to know me from the girl on the internet that knows finance, but because of this billion-dollar business that she knows how to build.
Right.
But I think it was just trusting what felt right. When I quit my job, I didn't know what I was going to do. I had $30,000. I had just got my real estate license because I just figured I could sell some houses. I don't know. But I just had this belief, and I think because I saw money, like, you can't tell me I can't have billions of dollars when I'm in the room with these people.
Right.
I'm seeing what they're investing in. I see the names of their accounts. I see where their homes are. I see what they're reading, where they travel. I'm talking to their kids. So my level of belief of what I saw, it's kind of like a young black boy in school. They believe they can be a basketball player because they see basketball players. Mm-hmm. I believed I could be a billionaire because I was around billionaires.
Right. Yeah.
So my perception, and it's like, okay, if that's going to be the case, you're not on track to be a billionaire, because I did the math. Even if I stayed in my job for 10 years, I still wouldn't have been qualified to be a Wall Street client.
Mm.
Because I know how much I was getting paid, how much you're raising, how much you're like, I wasn't on track. And I realized our clients either created their own idea or they invested in somebody else's idea. And it's like, well, I'm not on track to do either.
Yes.
Let me go be like the billionaires that I'm serving. Mm-hmm. And I would do what I saw them do. So I would travel where they travel. Mm-hmm. I would shop where they shop. Like, I was investing and reading the books like them. And it's like, well, they built a business. I don't know what this business thing is, but I'm going to create something. And I'd rather do what makes me feel right. And so I kind of just trusted my gut. And I mean, I done got kicked out of places. I done lost a lot. Like, years later, now you can put me into a Wall Street bank. And it's like, I mean, I partner with Wall Street Bank. So my level of confidence is different, but it's because I saw this when I left. I knew I was going to be that girl. I didn't care about the how, but I knew why, and I knew it was going to be me, and you couldn't stop me. So I think as I got more and more successful, failed more, became successful, my level of belief was stronger, and so I knew I could do it.
Gotcha.
I love it. So switching gears a little bit, now you've built this business, and now you're running it, which being an entrepreneur and working for entrepreneurs, in a sense, is totally different, right? What do you feel like has been the most trying or the most ghettoest thing that you've had to learn or overcome through your entrepreneurship journey?
So I think my life right now is ghetto.
Wow.
I think in every phase of entrepreneurship, is ghetto.
Nah, facts.
You go through the phase of like, you got to do everything,
mm-hmm.
but you're waiting on the money. The client doesn't pay. You got all the issues.
Right.
And then you get to a space where you realize you can't do everything. Mm-hmm. Because I tried. I did try.
Yes.
And you have to hire people.
Yeah.
But then you don't have money to hire people.
Yes.
So you still, so now you're overworked.
Yes.
Wishing for people. So then you make the money and boom, you can hire the people. But then you don't know what to do with the people because you're so used to doing what the people what they're attempting to do, yes. But you don't know how to let them do it because you're so used to doing everything.
Yes.
And then the people have feelings.
Yes.
Nobody told me about
that. And then, you know, but then you kind of care. But you willing
can
to work.
Can I care?
But,
can I not care?
But
like,
you want to work 24 hours.
Yes.
But they want to go home early.
Yes.
And it's, but I get it. So, yes. And I think it, because I was an employee before, mm-hmm. right? So when I think about, but I also came from a different environment. I worked on Wall Street. So that is not the best way to have a work-life balance. I was making a lot of money. But I was in a high stressful environment. Mm-hmm. Like you could not mess up on Wall Street. Like it was just, and again, it makes you sharp. That's why I think I am who I am now. But it doesn't work well with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like creatives, oh God, like I'm very analytical to the point. Like, yeah. And they're, you know, flowy. Like, yes. They create. And she's like, no, I need this done now. Right.
Yes.
But it's the people that is then you go through the phase of, all right, cool, you got the people. You can afford the people. But then I'm so used to being who I have been to now I can't just go make money anymore.
Yeah.
I got to build a culture.
Yes.
The other day I was measuring to get signs in my office because yes. I don't want my team just coming into an empty space with a desk and a chair.
Yes.
Like, but the whole time I'm like, you're not going to be doing right now to go make some money.
Right.
And it's like, well, if I don't make the money, then nobody gets paid. So I got to balance the fear of not making money because my time is now split between being a CEO.
Yes.
And I think it's one thing to be... My friends, I remember when I was going through this in the beginning, one of my friends said, are you sure you want to be a CEO? It's one thing to be a founder of a business, and it's another thing to be a CEO because being a CEO is just, I don't work for anybody but my team.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do this without them.
Right.
So if I can't do this without them, I got to figure out how to be the best version for them, but I got to learn them. So now I'm a Phil Jackson on the basketball court.
Right.
Trying to know, you know, who's my Dennis Rodman? Who's my Michael Jordan? Like,
yes.
who do I got to sub out because they're having a bad game today? Mm-hmm. And that energy takes time away from doing what I did when I didn't have a team.
Mm.
So I think... it's just different. It's just like the game changes when you got a team of people.
Thanks.
But now I'm at a point where, okay, cool, I have a team, but now you can see every hole in your business. And you need to hire more people, but more people, more energy, more
money,
more want to take up, more benefits,
yes.
more
yes.
health. It's just new.
Yeah.
So as I watch your show, I always went like, this is ghetto. But a lot of my ghettos are like, nobody told me this.
Yes.
So.
And I think that's what the definition of ghetto is, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just something I didn't expect.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't the expectation of what I thought being a CEO looked like. And even in that journey that you just talked about, at some point, the team starts to learn how to ride the bike.
It gets even more ghetto.
Yes.
The team learns how to ride the bike, and then you got to trust they know how to ride let them fall.
If
and it's like, well, no, let me pick you up. And it's just like, well, they're never going to know. And now I'm in the point now, this has just happened as I went outside. and so I'm outside, and I'm like, damn, I'm not talking to my team. What's going on? Like, and they're fine, but I'm like, No.
I feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah, like I'm like, I'm supposed to be there for you.
Yes.
Like, but I can't do what I got to do and be there for you.
Right.
And they're like, we're fine. It's just like, no. So now, I want to know everything too. And I can't.
Right.
And it's like, but you have to trust and train and grow and really find where they're strongest and where they're not and put them in the best position to win.
Yes.
But it's like, where's that manual? Which is why I hired an executive coach, because I'm not doing this thing alone. Like, I'm not about to trial and error my way through a staff. Like, I need to know this is what's happening, and they can kind of prepare me. But, I literally went through this probably over the past year and a half, but
It's a development. And then the last part about it is, once they actually get to know what they're doing, it's like, shit, now what I supposed to do? Like, damn, I need to learn my job as a CEO. Like, I literally felt it.
I think it's hard to just let go.
Yeah.
Like, you mean to tell me when I had to thug this out, when it was just me and maybe a couple other people and we sitting on the couch figuring this out.
Yes.
No desk, no office, no nothing. We just thugging it.
Yes.
It's like, now you like, but here's what's even crazier. And I don't think a lot of people talk about this. Nobody talks about this, that transformation. Cause I feel like it was just yesterday.
Yep.
I was figuring it out. And the things I figured out, there's a new thing that's ghetto. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you also got to accept that.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I feel safer thugging it out on the couch than walking into a fancy old office that cost me thousands of dollars.
Yes.
So my team has a good place to feel good to execute. And it's like, but then you want the bigger office. Mm-hmm. But the bigger office comes with the more people. Yes. And it's like sometimes like a walking contradiction, because like I want bigger, but you know what comes with bigger.
Yes.
Like, but when I was on the couch, my bigger on the couch is who I am today. Mm-hmm. So it's like being able to just deal with just that thought process of transforming who you are as a CEO is a process within itself that I think nobody, and so you also got, I got so many ghetto moments.
It's just ghetto.
Also even like that I went through I'm not even gonna say I'm through this, where it's like I want my team to see this through my eyes. Like why don't you understand that this doesn't really connect to the business?
Yeah,
it's just an idea, and it's just like, well, you can't shoot them down.
Yep.
But you also got to recognize, are they right? You know, like, so there's just so many unanswered things where this, the transformation of just having a team and having a good culture where people come in and say, I love working at Empify.
Yeah.
I love the impact that we're making. And I don't ever want to be that company that somebody comes to because they just have to get a check.
Yeah.
Like, and I take pride in that. Like, you got to love what we do, because you're going to go through hell and back dealing with the people that we serve.
Thanks.
Forget the culture. Thanks. You got to want these people to win, because they'll drive you insane. I had a call yesterday. Our members cussing us out because of a mistake they made. It's just like, well, you know why they're feeling like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why we exist, because nobody else wants to deal with this.
Yeah.
So we got, and I have to prepare my team to love on the people that America forgot to love. Mm. And that's a process within itself.
Yeah.
So you gotta wanna do this in order for this to work. And you gotta find those people.
Yeah.
And that's more of a feeling than a holistic science, in my opinion. Mm.
I love that. And I think that's the thing, because as you're hiring, a lot of it is not always just skills. It's your heart posture. Because like you said, we serve people that are the underserved. And a lot of times they don't be that's why they underserved, because other people don't even want to deal with them sometimes. You know what I mean? So it's like, you got to have a heart posture for this work. But what I tell people when they start, you're going to see your impact. In a corporation, you probably didn't see your impact all the time on Wall Street, right? Because it's 25 of y'all handling this one account. But like in this work, like I remember watching a video of your gala, like at your conference, and I could see that your team like literally was in the background just looking like, dang, we did this. Mm-hmm. And
that's how I felt too. Like, I literally when I had that event, it made everything real. Cause we have a community of over 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, there are people traveling from other countries, and it's like, dude, do you know that we saw each other on the computer?
Right.
The computer. Like, or a phone. And it's like, this is real. And it's like, but in that same moment, it's going to be 10,000 people in this room one day. Right.
Yes.
So, and it's, I think for me, it's constantly in embracing those moments. Because in that moment, I was so stuck. Mm. It was like, oh my, like, this is really real.
Yeah.
And I think you get so caught up in the nuances and you forget sometimes why you do what you do.
Right.
But then the same ghetto-ness you go through, it's worth it when you see something like that.
Yes, yes. And it's like, it's a whole evolution journey. So we have a segment on the show called Figure It The Fuck Out, because that is what we do all the time as a CEO. I say we a firefighter, because we always putting out fires. So I'm going to ask you a scenario.
Okay.
And you're going to let me know how you would figure it the fuck out.
Okay.
All right. So let's see what we get. Okay. All right. This is a good one. So you just talked to your attorney and you found out that your best friend trademarked your name. What's next? I'm trying to see if Philly Ashley coming out or.
Nope.
I think she
left when I left Philly. Okay.
Best friend.
Best friend.
Okay. All right. So I think one that deserves a phone call.
Mm.
So I'm picking up the phone, calling. I'm really good at not assuming, not playing the victim.
Okay.
So I'm just going to inquire.
Yeah.
You know, it's come to my attention.
Not the corporate email. This the corporate Ashley that came out.
Because I've learned just through life, like, you're going to get the energy you put out. Mm. You ever try to argue with somebody? You just keep on arguing. Yeah. Nobody, right. I'm trying to get louder so I win and so are you. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so I know that's not the solution.
Yeah.
I've also accepted in business that every day something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're so, fine. Okay. Have a conversation, you know, inquire as to why, you know, is this true? Was this you? You know, and understand what you did and what you're trying to get out of it. Mm. The Ashley in me is getting real deep and understanding how much you want. Because everybody got a number.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you recognize that you have the power to create money, I can go do what I got to do.
Yeah.
So I would inquire, not be mad, inquire as to what you did, why you did it, and what the intention was behind it. Mm. And then I would try to, you know, buy it out, how much you want.
Yeah.
And let the attorneys handle the rest.
Period.
So, still a hypothetical, but what does that do to the relationship at that
Oh, point? The relationship is over.
Okay, so it's like, once I pay you out, we good.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, and I don't even think any words have to be exchanged. Mm-hmm. What's done is done. I just need to make sure when it's done, it's legally done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then after that, we okay.
You know, that was one thing that I love about exposure to certain things. Because exposure allows you to be able to move and shape the way that you need to go, right? Because a lot of people don't respond like that. But because you were in Wall Street, my thought process is that you respond, what's your number? You have a number.
Oh, yeah.
I could pay
maybe
you.
That is the one.
Yeah.
Oh,
I forgot. Wow. I didn't think about it like that. What's your number? Because that's how millionaires, billionaires really respond. Yeah. Like, there's money can solve this because clearly that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What else? Why else would you do it? You had to pay for the trademark.
Right.
Like, you don't dislike me that much.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
I mean, right. way worse things you could do. But
yeah
I think for you to be that type of person to do something like that, you're hurting.
Yeah.
Not that I care to ask why,
yeah.
But I'm not going to feed your hurt. I'm going to feed your ego.
Mm.
That's why you did
that's
it in the first place.
Bar. I didn't know you rap too. I need that.
I am cracking up. But no, that's the thing. And I think that I want everybody to take this, right? Because there's going to be a time in your entrepreneurship career that something is trying to get your emotions, but it needs to have your logic. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And like you said, logically, what do we need to do to handle this so we can move forward? And I loved it. That was good. Okay.
There was no Philly coming out of me with that one.
No.
I got a question. So I know you early in your career spent a lot of time with billionaires. What's the best advice you got from a millionaire or a billionaire while you were on Wall Street?
So I wouldn't say I was that close to be able, because when you are you have to service the client.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't be like the sponge, right? Yeah, I had to serve. So I would conclude.
Yeah.
I would study and I would find comparisons.
Mm.
I would say you know how like poor people have poor people habits,
mm-hmm.
do poor people things, like, you know, mm-hmm. or just groups of people, African Americans. There's certain ways of and things that we live by, mm-hmm. and do, right? And again, no disrespect, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
Billionaires, when you're a high net worth client that we used to serve, they all operate the same way. Right?
Mm.
Because you get to a space, and just rightfully so, think about it. If you had $25 million,
mm-hmm.
$100 million, you worked your way there. Because not all wealthy people were trust fund babies.
Right.
Now, then that's one thing. But also, wealthy people, they may have had a different path and mm-hmm. different resources accessible. But not everybody, even though someone helped Jeff Bezos fund mm-hmm. Amazon or just anybody, right? Mm-hmm. You got to still turn it into a billion-dollar, trillion-dollar mm-hmm. business, right? It still takes a certain type of work ethic and mindset.
Right.
Wealthy people think the same way. When they would come to us, their main focus was growing their assets, right? We couldn't come saying you lost all this money.
Yeah.
We had to show you that you were growing.
Yeah.
And they focused on protecting and preserving.
Mm.
Rightfully so. I'm sure if I build a billion-dollar business, I'm doing everything to grow my money.
Facts.
Because after a while, I'm not even addicted to money.
Mm-hmm.
I love the impact that I do, right? If I want to build, my number's $3 billion. If I'm gonna build a $3 billion business, I got to figure out how to serve and impact more lives.
Yeah.
Like, that's it, right?
Right.
It's not about the money, because after a certain while, the money, like, it's not hard for me to make money.
Yeah.
What's harder is having a team to impact more lives, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm chasing. I want that, even though it's ghetto. Yeah. But some reason, I keep wanting more. I wake up every day to get bigger.
Yeah.
Not for the money, but for the impact. And that's why I left Wall Street. It never was for the money. I wanted to teach people that didn't have it. Right. So if I really wanted to make money, I would have stayed on Wall Street, right? So their mindset is about their power. Mm. Like in sustaining it and retaining it. And then what happens is you make it, you definitely don't want to give it to the government.
Right.
So let's figure out the best strategies to avoid taxes. Rightfully so. Even employees, nobody wants to pay taxes, whether you're making $20,000 or $10
million. Right.
So we can't be mad that wealthy people avoid taxes.
Yes.
If you could avoid your employer tax, you would too. Like, so I noticed that was a mindset. Mm. There was no fear in put this money to work. There was no, I'm scared. Let me hold it. Let me save it. Let me go make bigger. Let me go do more. And you over here help me grow it. You help me protect it. Yeah. And you help me do more of what I'm trying to do and sustain it for my family. Because whether you like it or not, the reason a rich stay rich is because they know the tools and resources, but they're protecting and preserving and passing it down.
Right.
Even when we make millions of dollars, and this is one of the things I'm actually about to start working on in my business. Like, I'm seeing how much people are investing. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens if something happens to you today?
Yeah.
Empathy is not going to be there for your family.
Right.
You are. So how am I building an infrastructure so that the even if you're investing $20 a month, something happens to you, how are we making sure your family is set so we don't got to start Empathy all over again in your household?
Right.
So there are strategies and tools in place that are not in our school system because you do have to understand a certain game. It's not easy to have a conversation with somebody who has a job to tell them how to protect and preserve their wealth.
Right.
But there are ways to do it when you're an investor. There's ways to do it when you're a business owner. So how can I, if everybody doesn't want to be a business owner, what if they want to, I can turn them all into investors.
Yeah.
You could go toe to toe with me right now and I can tell you why you need to be investing right now.
Right.
So when you go through that mindset, and that becomes a standard in your life, and there is no plan B, you're going to do everything you can to protect it.
Yeah.
So for me, I always saw they were investing in their own idea or somebody else's idea. Like, if you just think about a Jay-Z, like, it's always something new he's doing because he knows if I put all my money in the bank, I'm going to lose it because of inflation. I'm not sitting hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank doing nothing.
Right.
I saw what I did to do to create this money.
Right.
Let me go figure out how to create more so that my kids are always set and I can make an impact and make a name for myself. So, and Jay-Z is just an example, but I think what if we had that same mindset making $50,000 a year?
Yeah.
What if we had that same mindset making $75,000, $100,000 a year?
Right.
Because I know this generational curse stops with me.
Yeah.
So wealthy people, it was bigger than just money. It was about what the money could do for them in a way that could allow them to grow and protect the wealth that they've accumulated.
I love it. This was good. this is good, Ashley. So what will you leave the people with? What should they know?
Are we being ghetto? are we being... So I would say... I would say there's two ways to build wealth. Mm-hmm. Investing in somebody else's idea or investing in your own idea. Mm. I think the internet allows you to feel like you can just go and do and create, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not for everybody. But you can allow another billionaire run another company and invest in that company so that they can create for you.
Yeah.
And so I think taking a podcast like this to recognize like, hey, I could build a business. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. Just like I can have a job. And that's not easy.
Pick your heart.
Right. It's about your perception.
Yeah.
And if you could change your perception about how you choose to live your life as an employee, how you choose to live your life as a business owner, you can change your perception of how you perceive wealth in this country.
Mm.
Because it's not until we look in the mirror and we say, I deserve to be that Wall Street client that Ashley used to serve.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I looked in the mirror and said that to myself that I had the balls to say, I'm not going to be here anymore.
Yeah.
I'm way bigger than this. So it's being able to look at your bank account and say, I'm way bigger than this.
Yeah.
To look at your business and to say, I'm way bigger than this.
Yeah.
And believe that you're bigger than this.
Yes.
And do everything you can to tell your mind every single day that you deserve to live like this. And I think when we focus on shifting the mindset and growing our mindset, we'll grow our bank account. We'll grow our businesses. We'll grow our impact. But it starts with what's going on the inside that's going to literally change what's happening on the outside.
I love this. Ooh, y'all make sure y'all tap in with Ashley. Join our community so that you can also be able to build wealth, guys. Listen, make sure y'all like, comment, and subscribe to the podcast so we know that we're doing a good job, okay? And y'all tap in with Ashley. But Cody, I got a question for you.
Talk to me, dog.
What rhymes with CEO?
G-A-E-T-T-O.
Bye, y'all. Ooh, the ghetto. Invoice